The Anton Savage Show with Kearies.ie on News Talk.
The Anton Savage Show with you every Sunday, 10 to 12. Coming up between now and 12 o'clock, we'll hear how AI may be the cause of and solution to all of journalism's problems. Sean Moncrief will be pitching us the value of Ulysses, because today is Bloomsday. And believe it or not, Sean is a huge fan of one of the world's worst books, and he'll be explaining why I'm wrong on that. And we'll be looking at all of the stories making the news through the good offices of John Cunningham, Relationship Director with Morgan McKinley, Hazel Chew, former Lord Mayor of Dublin and Green Party Councillor, and Kevin Doyle, who is Group Head of News at Media Hoosh, otherwise known as Independent. Do you ever use Media Hoosh?
No. Has anyone ever gone into a shop, Anton, and bought a Media Hoosh? Or gone online and gone, I must look up the news on Media Hoosh? No.
Sorry, from the Independent, that being Sunday and Daily, of course, where he is news editor. All right, let us start then with, there's a lot of analysis as to where last week's election has left us. And there is suggestions, Kevin, that hubris is the defining characteristic of the now largest party by popularity in local government, that being Fine Gael. And a lot of commentary and a lot of unnamed sources suggesting Simon Harris, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, needs to wind his neck in.
Yeah, two things going on here, I think. The Sunday Times are leading on that story, and I'm not surprised because there has been a lot of talk of that during the week. And look, we sat here last weekend, Anton, and you saw the text messages coming in from various people in Fine Gael. They were giddy, was the word that kept getting used. And look, in some ways, you can't blame them. They thought they were going to have a terrible day out. Hazel will tell you, it's quite an emotional thing. I mean, we play the game of politics here. We like to do the numbers and the stats and the who's up and who's down and the winners and losers. But for a lot of those guys, it's a very personal thing. They thought friends were going to lose jobs, people would be out in their ear, and it didn't happen. And they did get arguably a little bit overexcited. And Simon Harris went into the Dáil during the week and kind of threw it back in Mary Lou's face a little bit, had a little go at the Independents as well, who obviously also had a very strong day out. I do think there's a second thing going on. So there is some truth to it. There is a second thing going on. Those sources are largely being quoted as Fianna Fáil sources. And I do think there's a game at play there as well, which is Fianna Fáil are now trying to paint Micheál Martin as the sober statesman in this relationship. He is the grown-up in the room, whereas Simon is running around the country with all this Energizer bunny energy. And actually, he's a bit immature.
He's the callow youth.
Yes, he doesn't realise it's just one election. It's just one day out. He got on great. And it's all going to his head. And the power is going to his head. So I do think there's a little attempt within Fianna Fáil to kind of just paint, to maybe overemphasise the hubris and perhaps paint Fine Gael as losing, kind of losing perspective on the whole thing as well. So games within games.
Although presumably as well, there is great happiness within Fianna Fáil, because likewise, there was an expectation that the result would be a lot worse than it was.
Well, they came out as the biggest party in this is the great game going on in government buildings at the moment. Is Fine Gael are claiming they got the biggest vote. So by a scintilla of a percentage, they got the biggest percentage vote in the country. But actually, Fianna Fáil came away with the biggest number of seats. So they're both trying to argue over who won
they
the election, depending on which metric.
Like.
But the truth is, it was a draw. Like it couldn't have been any closer. It was a draw, and they should all just go, that was a great day out, when's the general election?
Well, on that topic, Hazel Chew, what's your take on when we are likely to see the general? Because the two competing arguments, if I see what's in the papers this weekend, one is the by-elections will incentivise it to be towards the end of October and not hold separate by-elections. The other is reports suggesting that Simon Harris very much wants to hand Shamrock to whoever happens to be in the White House, and therefore he will hang on till after that.
Well, in terms of technicalities, let's be clear now that it doesn't have to be a by-election in October. Mm. So the seats don't kick in until July. So realistically, if you want to, you can have a January by-election which folds into a general. Now, no one wants to go canvassing in January. I'm sorry, but no one wants to campaign.
No offense, Hazel, I don't want you knocking on my door Christmas week either.
It's okay. The other people knocking on your door, Kevin. It's fine. But to that point, I think
and
there's a lot...
Cut across, Hazel. Can I just check on that? Because we always say the thing of, well, nobody wants to canvass in January. Is that because it is less electorally effective, or is the simple practicality of nobody wants to trudge around in the rain in the dark?
A bit of both. Like you saw with this election, and this is, I'm sure we'll get into a part of Sinn Féin's issue, is that they don't have the ground troops as much mobilised, and no party did. If you ask across the board, many parties will tell you they didn't have the ground troops going out knocking on doors like they previously do. And if you have a Christmas election or just after Christmas election, I can tell you most people will go, sorry, we just don't have that energy. We have all sorts of different things to contend to. Saying that as well, I think being a voter, do you really want, to Kevin's point, do you really want to see anyone knocking on your door at Christmas asking you for your vote and you giving that time to tell them exactly what's wrong with the country as well? Because that's what canvassing is. But to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, I find that a little amusing because at the end of the day, they are the bigger winners per se, but they both lost seats. They're parties that lost seats. So if you look at the electoral maths, because at one hand, as a candidate, yes, Kevin's right. You have that emotion of friends losing seats on you or other people return. But it's also down to electoral maths. Even though you didn't have a bad day, it doesn't necessarily mean you had a good day. Same as Sinn Féin claiming, oh, we didn't have a bad day. But they started on a pretty low base and gaining 10 seats doesn't mean they gained that much as well. So all in all, I think it's a lot of talk right now.
There is a real thing that because Sinn Féin had such a bad day versus their expectations. Yeah. It's all about expectation management, but they had such a bad day that everybody else, even the Greens, who didn't have a good day, came away going, well, it wasn't as bad as Sinn Féin. And therefore you feel better. Yeah.
Well, on that note, is that another incentive, John, for Simon Harris to think about a slightly early election? Because there is, I mean, Jodie Corcoran in The Independent and the Hugh O'Connell has detailed analysis of the apparently mammoth task facing Sinn Féin to gather back up the momentum they once had. Does that incentivise to say, go now while the going's good?
Well, I think the only thing that the leaders can say at the moment is we're going to go to the full term. Anybody I've spoken to is saying that there's absolutely, if it goes past November, they'd be nuts. So the talk has to be at the
moment. As in they'd be nuts to go into a winter election.
Yeah, they'd be nuts to go beyond November, end of October, November for the election. And I think that the only thing they can do at the moment is to talk about it going full term, to allow them. I mean, think about what they've all come out with, all the bubbles and the excitement, all right? They're all a bit buzzed at the moment with regard to the whole thing. They need now to catch their breath and decide what the process is going to be. So they will talk and talk and talk about the election happening full term until they decide not to. And I think absolutely the Sinn Féin, and we'll talk about that later, but you have to think at the moment that the conversation within Sinn Féin is going to take more than a week or two for them to really get their heads around what happened and why. Even though we all know, well, I think we'll talk about that, we all know what really happened and the fact that it was as obvious on the nose of people's faces what they did and where they ended up.
Oh, do tell.
Oh, straight. So I suppose, first of all, it is, I mean, when you think about the previous, prior to the election, the polls, I mean, this is going to be another interesting conversation. Where did the polls come from? Where did the journalists get their information with regard to what was going to happen? Fianna Fáil were going to be decimated. Sinn Féin were going to take over. The far right and the far left were going to rise, okay? It didn't happen. Now, from my perspective with regard to Sinn Féin, this was...
To be fair, I don't think that's entirely what the polls said. Okay, the polls showed a very clear trend that Sinn Féin were losing support week on week.
And sorry. Fianna Gael was going up.
So. Yeah, so, and the polls also relate to choice in a general, choice in a local. Yeah. And have a turnout that is 15 to 20% higher.
Okay, so... There I am now. I'll withdraw all of that and go back. I'll go back to answering your question, which is the Sinn Féin thing. So, from my perspective, having watched it, okay, one, that immigration issue, and I was mentioned on the show previously, you know, as the former chair of the Immigrant Council of Ireland, I remember when Sinn Féin were registering migrants in the Dublin city centre to get candidates elected and work for them. And they never squared that circle with regard to the election, with regard to the fact that there's a rump of their party were anti-immigration. So they failed in that with regard to getting the narrative right. The housing issue and the €300,000 house, there were never 35%, I don't think anybody believed, but certainly I can tell you that there was a whole cohort of middle-class Dublin and Ireland who were saying things like, I will give them a go. Okay, and that became that soft sort of percentage in the middle. That housing thing for me killed that completely dead. And then the last thing is, again, I think that it caught up with them is that this whole conversation they've had, which has been so completely negative about Ireland being a failed state, which I believe to be fundamentally untrue, eventually caught up with them. People kind of thought, you know what, it's easy to be the hurdle on the ditch. And they had other options with regard to making that work. And also, again, I saw in some of the conversations today, it was Jodie Corcoran was spoken about, you know, about Mary Lou was talking about being humble. And there's, you know, an adjective you wouldn't have put to Mary Lou prior to this. But to me, the biggest issue, and again, it was Jodie Corkin spoke about, like, you know, this issue of identity. So he said, you know, are they going to be the cool, progressive, left of centre party? Or are they going to be the hard, nationalist, Brit-hating party? And at the moment, they tried to seem to straddle both, and I think they got caught short. So back to your point, if an election takes place in November, I don't think they're going to have the time to regroup, rebuild and regain that momentum. So if you're in Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or any of the key parties, if it goes beyond November, they'll be mad.
Now, Hazeltine, you obviously have a dog in the fight by virtue of being a Green Party councillor.
Congratulations, Hazel, on your election.
Thank you.
Here, here. In your analysis of Sinn Féin's position as they now stand, because that in terms of big political moves, it is the most significant one. We were all told that there was a huge wave of popular support and the election would suggest that that's now not there to the extent that we had been previously told. Is it a fault of the polls not matching the locals? And if you're Sinn Féin, do you just say, steady the course, it'll all come back into the generals? Or is this a long, dark night of the soul for them?
I think it's a long, dark night for the soul for every party, to be honest with you. So I don't think it's just Sinn Féin. I know, obviously, certain parties are more buzzed than others. But this is a good time. Like, I even as a candidate, I would have looked at electoral kind of maths more because I used to chair the electoral task force in the Greens. And for me, it's about a numbers game. And for Sinn Féin, it's about a strategy. So to John's point, where is their positioning at the moment? You can't be a man for all people. You just can't. So choose your platform, choose where your strategy is and choose where your aims are going. Are you centre-left still? Are you centre? And looking by the recent immigration issues, are you centre-right actually? Are you moving there? From that strategy, then you look at, well, who is now your base? Who's going to be your supporters? And how are you going to campaign? Like Sinn Féin has always, like people
don't
might
be giving
like
them a plan, Hazel. Don't be giving them the plan.
But the thing is, John, people might not like it or agree, but Sinn Féin were always very good at mobilising the on-ground support and very good at campaigning and strategy planning. And I was kind of aghast at the council centre looking at the various votes and how they transferred in different wards. Running four in wards was just madness. So like anyone with a ounce of electoral kind of sensibilities will tell you, even if you think your vote is high in those areas, you're cannibalising your own vote. So, and running three in certain places as well.
And was that a pendulum overreaction to the previous criticisms of not having run enough?
Yes, absolutely. And it's that criticism that has brought them to the point where they thought, okay, we must overcompensate by running four here or three here. And it doesn't work because even if you have a strong base in those areas, you're still eating your own vote. So even the max you run is two. So, and you can transfer then if it works out well for you.
Go back for a bit though. What you're saying in that about the thing of delineating very clearly who your core demographic is, presumably there is a very difficult challenge in that for Sinn Féin, because the critical thing that Mary Lou McDonald has had to do and continues to have to do is to add that non-traditional middle-class urban Sinn Féin potential vote to the grassroots, and they're not the same thing.
They're not the same thing, but they have to decide, well, which is not that which is more important, but can you merge it into the same thing? Can you present enough and not just populism, but can you present enough in terms of policies, in terms of where you want to lead the country to convince people to move to the place that you are? Because currently there is that separation of ideology there and trying to, again, be wanting to all people.
Text saying local elections, people vote for the person based on work done in the community rather than the party. And I think that was a point that you made last weekend, Kevin, about the incumbency and the importance of it. I reached out to all my local councillors in the past year. I would never vote Green in a general election, though I voted Green because he was the only councillor that responded to the two issues that I reached out on. Locals do not necessarily translate to the general. In local elections, people vote for the person based on work done in the community rather than the party. I know people who gave Fine Gael number one, but in the general election will be voting Sinn Féin. Another, Anton, can you please address the low turnout of 39%? This is a massive problem that less than half of those who could vote were disinterested, I think, uninterested in using their vote. Well, as to that, how much do you think, Kevin, the return of that proportion, because it's a thing that a number of Sinn Féin people have said, is, look, there is 15 or 20% that didn't show up at this election. We have good reason to believe that a lot of them may turn out for us at the general, and that'll solve a lot of our current problems.
Yeah, so we're at 49% is what turned out, which is a record low.
49, my apologies.
And you could safely say that we'll be up over 60% in a general election. Mm. So that is not good enough to do the maths in my head, but that is like we're talking hundreds of thousands of people back into play, who weren't motivated for whatever reason to go out and vote in the local and European elections. A general election is very, very different. Like, we are back, you know, you talk about the Simon Harris getting overexcited. Like, we are back at ground zero now.
Yeah.
What this has done is given Fine Gael, who are losing somewhere between 13 and 17 TDs, depending on the mood after the local. Some might actually cling on now rather than step back. But it has helped find replacements. Yeah. For which, so a few months ago, they were like, who are we going to run in Laois? Who are we going to run if when Leo Varadkar doesn't go, Simon Coveney in Cork? This will give a good sense of what they have to play with. So they have candidate options that they didn't have previously. Sinn Féin obviously wants...
They have candidate options because people are more enthusiastic about the prospect of running for them, or because they now have people who are local councillors?
Both. There will be people who wouldn't have put their name on the Fine Gael ticket because they would have thought, well, I won't have a chance in the Fine Gael ticket, so I'm just going to hang back, wait 5 years and see how things play out. Will now be thinking, actually, I could be in the Dáil right now. There is definitely enthusiasm in Fine Gael that I haven't seen there. Certainly not since Leo Varadkar was elected in there. And it had been dragging for a while under Enda Kenny before that. So there is definitely, dare I say it, inverted commas, new energy within Fine Gael. But the difference is, when you go to a general election, Sinn Féin will not be on 11%, 12% in a general election. I suspect they won't also be on 30%, as the polls once suggested. They will probably be back closer to where Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil are now, and you'll have a three-horse race. And it will come down to manifestos. So can any of you remind me what the last general election was won and lost on?
Housing.
No, absolutely not housing. No, a dead air silence. It was on what age can you retire? The pension. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were all over the shop. Fine Gael were going to make it up to 67 and 68, and they were sticking by that. Fianna Fáil wanted to put it into a working shop, because that was very often Micheál's response to a problem, is we'll set up a working group and tell you after the election what we'll do. And Sinn Féin said, no, it's now 66, we'll bring it back to 65. And that was on the front page of the paper. This studio was obsessed with it, and that was the topic. So who knows what way a general election goes, because we can't predict the topic.
I want to bring John in one sec. Before I do, you talked about that peak of the 34-35%-ish when they were at their absolute max. I think it's Jody Cochrane who's referring to that as pure froth as he looks now back at it. What caused that drop? Because you're saying at the general, if you're predicting, they will be at least down in the 20s from the 35. What caused, in your view, that comeback? Because never have I seen such an air of assumed power on the way. There was broad consensus that we may as well call it quits now. Sinn Féin is the next government.
Yeah, I think it's multifaceted. There isn't a single reason that brought it back down to earth. One, I would suggest, is that it was always a soft vote. So Micheál Martin talks about Fianna Fáil never getting their dues in the opinion polls. There is a core vote for Fianna Fáil. There's a core vote for Fine Gael that is probably above 15%. So even on their worst day, that's where they're... Like, Fianna Fáil bankrupt the country at one point and still came back above 15%. So they have that core vote that is there. Sinn Féin didn't have that because they're coming from a smaller base. So people ebb in, ebb out. I think the flip-flop stuff really stuck this time around. I think the changes on their housing policy, on immigration, not being sure what to say about that, I think that really stuck. And then the tricolour being stolen from them by some of those in the far-right anti-immigration space, I think that damaged them badly as well. So they actually came under attack from the centre, if you like, as in the coalition parties, and they came under attack from those on the fringes. And it's a strange election in that sense, but I think it was all those factors together, and they didn't have a plan to fight back against it.
Difficult factors to fight back against, though.
They are, and I think, again, that what's really, really interesting is back to 35%, which I don't believe anybody thought they were ever at. But this issue of this, I don't even want to call it middle class, but this middle Ireland vote. And the people I met who kept saying, I suppose you'd give them a go. You'd like to maybe this, and either one, get them in and they'll fail and maybe get them out, or actually maybe they might have some very interesting policies. So that whole soft vote on the periphery to me just dissipated as the time went by with regard to, as I said, immigration, housing, and the whole negative narrative. The failed state thing just for me really started to bother people.
There is one point, Anton, on that as well. When you talk about that high that they were once at one time, a thing I constantly heard from people in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil was this idea of, look, we'll have to let them in for a term and people can see what they are.
Yeah.
And they'll see what happens to the economy, and they'll see that they can't fix housing and health no more than Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil have done. And that's changed now. That's gone now. People in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are like, we can get another term. And so the election's going to be fascinating.
But judging by the texts that are coming in, they might want to watch that. A text saying, the Fine Gael gloating is sickening. Mm. I would traditionally have voted for the local rep, now minister, but after the carry-on of the last week, I won't be. Yeah. They're meant to represent the people, not serve their egos. Another, keep fighting the last election, not running enough candidates. This, I think, relates to Sinn Féin, then running too many. They didn't learn the lessons from 2019. That said, local elections and generals are very different beasts. So those champagne corks in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael HQ will fall deathly silent on the next day the country goes to the polls. If you have a view, 53161, actually saying, remember Labour in the UK in the early 90s, all was up on opinion polls until it came to polling day. Nobody would actually vote for them. Sinn Féin should take note. Anyway, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. We have to talk about the horrifying news that Michael O'Leary may not get his €110 million bonus out of Ryanair and how he's coping with the disappointment. Because always when Michael O'Leary decides to give an interview, he tends to give pretty good value and to return to his bonus. So this is the issue of €100 million that he would get if Ryanair's share price stayed above €21 per share for 28 consecutive days, or if the airline reported annual post-tax profits of €2.2 billion. O'Leary is saying, am I concerned about my bonus? Not particularly, but I do think the fact that I haven't made it now for 6 years so shows just how stretched the targets were. I don't particularly want a big salary here. It's not like I need the salary. Imagine being in a position, John, where you could look at €100 million and say, nah.
Well, the first thing I want to do maybe is suggest we should set up a GoFundMe page to help out with this. Now, I know it costs a lot of money to look after pedigree cattle and horses, but I have to say that what we must really just acknowledge is that he's chief executive of an extraordinary Irish-based, Irish-owned, or now quoted company out of Ireland, and that is what's extraordinary. Now, what is amazing, we look at the Mbappe, he got €100 million for signing on, don't mind his weekly salary.
Yeah, this, I should say, is because Michael O'Leary has compared himself to both Elon Musk and Kylian Mbappe.
Now, as the fellow says, Elon Musk is leaving us all in the halfpenny place with this €44 billion, $54 billion, all right. But you know what, again, I don't know if you saw today, Enterprise Ireland have a whole campaign out to invest in businesses that can become billion-dollar businesses, these kind of unicorn organisations. And Ryanair should be lauded for what it has achieved and what it's doing. And I have to say to you that he's worth every bit of his €100 million. Now, I have to say that I'm really surprised it's taken him 6 years, which means that maybe he's less influence than we all thought he had with regard to how his target, how his bonus would be
set. I just want to be clear, and I'm not disagreeing, we're just clarifying. He's worth €100 million of a bonus.
I think he is, absolutely. Bring it on.
Hazel?
No, he's not. Very simply put, because the man doesn't seem to understand science. So if you're going to be claiming you're worth €100 million in a bonus, then I don't know, at least pick up a book or some facts.
What is the science that he is missing?
First and foremost, the science he's missing in the interview, Anton, is that he's claiming, well, you know, we pay $4.50 per seat on environmental taxes and we're only, flights are only 3% of the emissions. He seems to negate the fact that it's going to be increasing 22% if you lift a cap. In emissions, rise in emissions in Dublin Airport is that it will be 22% increase if you lift the cap on passengers. But
now, hang on for a minute. Let me just on that. What he says in the interview is, let's be realistic. That travel will increase somewhere in Europe. The question is where it is based, not whether or not it'll happen. And all Dublin will do by not raising the cap is won't have any impact on net emissions. It'll just shove it off to somewhere else.
But this is the same man who runs an airline group that is responsible for one of the highest emission rates. It is pure fact that Ryanair is by far Europe's most polluting airline. There's data on this. And this is the same person who wants €100 million in bonus but refused to acknowledge.
But that's a function of Ryanair's scale. If you are as big as Ryanair, you have as many planes as Ryanair has many engines.
But this goes back to then scaling. Goes back to the original topic of he wants to reach his share price by scaling more, by lifting cap, but not understanding that there is an environmental impact by being the biggest, one of the biggest airlines that's polluting the most and denying that there's climate change. So you can't keep on having growth and say, well, screw the rest of the planet, I'll take my 100 million bonus.
But nor can you be, I would have thought, the chief executive of an organisation where you have a fiduciary responsibility to shareholders, which requires you, I think legally, to grow.
Yes, but your responsibility as well in any corporation and any multinational at the moment is to have a sustainable growth plan that has environmental action. In all multinationals these days, they focus on, hopefully it's not just a buzzword for them to say that there is climate action, that there needs to be sustainable growth. This is not sustainable growth, what he's proposing here.
It is a difficult one though, Kevin, because when you look at aviation as an industry, in several other industries, there are, whether or not they will come to fruition, but there's prospects of technological solutions. You can go to wind power, you can go to hydrogen power, you can go to lithium ion batteries, all that kind of stuff. Not much you can do about jet engines.
I really feel like all of this is above my pay grade, if I'm honest.
Bring in scientists.
100 million euro bonus, Kevin, if you come up with a good analysis.
If I can come up with a way of saving the aviation industry from climate. Yeah, like I it does seem like aviation is a long way off coming up with an alternative fuel solution. It will happen, but is that 10 years? Is that 20 years? Is that we get into the in our lifetime question, which is never a good space to be, because if it's not in our lifetime, well, then it gets pushed off to the next generation. So I don't know. Michael O'Leary feels undervalued and underappreciated. I'm not sure who exactly underappreciates. Well, Hazel obviously underappreciates.
Significantly,
them.
We've established
but
that.
But more generally.
Well, there's a fine point here in by text saying, hang on a minute, suggesting that we all have skin in this game. Quit slagging Michael O'Leary. Half of that bonus money will be coming back to us in taxes. At least O'Leary is tax resident here, unlike other Irish millionaires and billionaires. So we will get...
Yeah, look, I think he's Marmite. People love him or people hate him. And John loves him, Hazel hates him. Proves
oh,
the point.
Hazel hates nobody,
and I don't think anybody really loves Michael O'Leary. But the point is, let me be very clear, the reason Ryanair are growing is because people choose to fly. Okay, so in that continuum of the process, so we've got bigger questions to answer here, and we can't blame Ryanair and the airlines for all of that. We as individuals choose to fly.
It's probably the other thing, it's a bit of a game, right? You read the interview about his looking for the money for the bonus in there. Like, it does feel, I think, was it you, Anton? Somebody used a soccer analogy there, being the soccer manager. Like, my first instinct, so he has to keep the share price above €21 for 28 days. So it's like, you have to be top of the Premier League for a certain period. So like, my natural instinct was to go and look, how much is the share price right now? So on Friday, it closed at €16.77. So he's quite a chunk off it. But it does feel like he's playing, and the picture of him in the Business Post is him holding a big chess piece. And it just feels like he's playing a game, and actually, you know, all of Hazel's upset or John's love bombing for Michael, it's all just content.
But that comes down to, Kevin, like, you're talking about emotions here. I'm trying to rein a bag that we need to talk about the data and the science, because John might claim, oh, it's our choice here, our personal choice, but the fact remains that whether you give someone a choice or not, there is still leaders of industry that needs to make an example and
Absolutely.
Needs to choose back to the choice word of forgoing his 100 million bonus and scaling so much, but look at the impact, environmental impact he has.
Well,
and no, one thing first, Anton, one of your quotes was, well, it should be someone else, because it's going back into ether. Europe and the others are the ones that are really the highest polluters. But again, we need to act as the leaders. We need to be the ones stepping forward and say, listen, this
is
our
responsibility. Well, let me quote Michael O'Leary in response to you. What he says is 2.4% that airlines account for in terms of emissions. The short haul airlines account for 47% of that, and we pay environmental taxes. But all the long haul airlines pay zero. So please don't give me, I'll paraphrase, some bull environmental argument that says we shouldn't grow in Dublin. The only consequence of us not growing in Dublin is the same emissions and the same growth will relocate to the UK, Spain, Portugal, Italy, France and Germany.
Yes, and back to my point that you may claim, oh, it's going somewhere else, but it strengthens the argument that for Ireland is to take a lead on this at European level and push for passenger caps across the region, and not just say, listen, everyone else is doing it, so we should do the same. We can't.
Well, we've got to be really careful not to conflate them all together, okay? There's two separate issues here. One is a commercial quoted business, which is an airline that's doing a really good job of getting people around for value for money, with all the problems with regard to emissions. The bigger question is, again, that both political and social responsibility with regard to saving the planet. And I think we've got to be very careful that, one, Michael Leary and his board need to take responsibility for what they do with regard to whether it's going to be hydrogen or whatever other ways they can reduce it.
What
okay,
could possibly go wrong with hydrogen and aviation?
What could possibly go wrong? But anyway, let's have the discussion.
Do you want to respond to that before we take a break?
I think John trying to delineate and separate out things to say, listen, it's not one or another. Whereas you already had the likes of Michael Leary coming before the Oireachtas Committee last week on transport, talking about how the political leadership affects the other. I.e., he's already asking for political leadership. Mm. And what I'm pushing back on is, all of it is intertwined. You can't claim leadership yet trying to disconnect everything.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. We were speaking earlier about the last election. In our house, says a text, my wife and I voted for local Sinn Féin candidates, or the local Sinn Féin candidate, as he sorted an issue for us. I'm of the mindset, give Sinn Féin a go in government and we'll find out about them very quickly. My wife, however, does not want Sinn Féin in government. Coming up after the break, one of the issues, of course, was significant within the last election and possibly maybe at the general, though we will see, is immigration and asylum seekers, international protection seekers, and their capacity to actually get international protection or end up in tents on the street. We're seeing more of that, but apparently proposals now that Thornton Hall is going to be the panacea. We will discuss whether or not that's the case after this break. It's the Anton Savage Show. With me is Hazel Chew, former Lord Mayor of Dublin and Green Party councillor, John Cunningham, Relationship Director of Morgan McKinley and Chair and Country Director of Lysis Group, and Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News at Independent. Hazel, a totally unrelated question. Am I right in saying, this relates to the Lord Mayoralty, am I right in saying that because the legislation that created the role of Lord Mayor is so old, the spouse of the Lord Mayor is the Lady Mayoress regardless of their gender? So if it is a female mayor who's married to a man, he is the Lady Mayoress.
Yes, I have had quite a few times when people call me the Lady Mayoress and I tell them, well, I leave it. But sometimes, because the office being the office, they automatically correct and say she's the Lord Mayor and her husband is Lady Mayoress. So Patrick was a Lady Mayoress. Who else? Joe Costello was a Lady Mayoress. Donna Gagan was a Lady Mayoress. So there has been a
real equality.
Do you get many people who have the guts to address them as the Lady Mayoress?
No, but Patrick did have a habit of going around going, I'm the Lady. He was very proud of his title. He kept on saying,
very progressive. Oh, yes. Very progressive.
Well, his thing was, listen, like, until you change it, but I'm going to fulfill my role as Lady Mayoress.
Oh, they should never change it. That's one of those things. It is too good for it to ever be changed. Okay, we were talking before the break. There is reports that Thornton Hall is going to be the solution to all of our problems. I think this is in the Sunday Times, Kevin. This is the... Yeah. What now is... I mean, it's a bit like foot and mouth that the market to be in was in carpet and mat supply. The market to be in the minute is Harris fencing because it is now all over town.
It's graceful.
And Thornton Hall is the solution, apparently.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's the solution, but it is another part of, I suppose, what they think will be the solution. We know the site, the government, I think, paid 30 million for it years ago for the super prison.
Yeah.
Never happened. But it has services, which is what was lacking in a lot of the places that the asylum seekers were being sent before. It was kind of been thrown together, if you like, whereas Thornton Hall actually has water and electricity and kind of a base there. So what... and a lot of what is used now is agricultural land. So the idea is they're going to put up some kind of army, they call them tents, but and they are, I suppose, tents, but they're not the tents you see
they're
on the street.
They're not a
tent. They're robust.
Yeah, they're not. They're more marquee kind of scenarios. And 200 people, mixed men and women, could be moved out there in the coming weeks. So I guess that fills another part of where do we move the people to not have them along the canal or Mount Street. I mean, it is ridiculous now that we're into the summer months and that we have barricades all along what should be a night. Like, cities need to be livable. And you can still walk by the canal, but it doesn't feel like a nice walk by the canal anymore.
No,
it feels
to be
like
said that
caged
for
in.
People who, because that area is a significant area of employment, particularly in white collar employment. Lunchtime around there, that was an amenity used by hundreds of
Thursdays and Fridays. The place was rammed with those open up the carts. And again, I sit in the Council of Dublin Chamber, and you think of the effort that's gone in over the years to make that whole area with the cycle paths, with the seats, with the planting and everything else to make it accessible to people. That Thursday and Friday, the great buzz, people get their falafel and they sit along the canal. It's absolutely distressing to walk along and see that it's been cordoned off. The Thornton Hall, I think, is certainly I mean, I was in Stockholm 2 weekends ago and people were saying there's no homeless people or beggars in Stockholm. That's because they're all out in the suburbs, okay? So this is something that, again, it's not a solution. It's an interim sort of a plan to get them off the streets. But again, you've got to ask yourself the question. In fairness, I think that Simon Harris, besides the energy, has taken control of the immigration narrative somewhat, but they still have to get that fundamental integrated immigration strategy sorted. Now, I don't.
Why is it taking so long? Because again, you're former chair of the Immigrant Council. Yeah. So this is not something you're.
No, and it's going on for all of the years. For 15 years, it's been talked about. Look, make it as difficult and as strict. Make it transparent and clear. But what's quite clear at the moment is that the Rwanda policy in the UK has absolutely led to there being a problem with regard to the over the border access. And I want to know what are they doing and how are they going to deal with it? Okay, because as it stands at the moment, again, there's buses turning up outside the Burlington with 10, 15, 20 people, and they could be coming down 3 or 4 times a day, and they're getting out of their tents. They've given the address for the what's it called? The place on...
IPO office.
Yeah, IPO office, okay. And what are they doing about it? And again, it's about this, the fear of dealing with this. No policy, and no representative for immigrants has ever said we need open borders. We need clarity with regard to how you get in and when you get in, what you can expect to get. And at the moment, it's really clear that the reason they've maintained those barriers is that they absolutely believe if the barriers were taken away this afternoon, the place would be full of people camping in the morning. So this needs to be strategic and long-term, and Thornton Hall would fix an immediate problem. But please now...
But the bit that I don't understand, and maybe there is a subtlety to this that I'm missing, is the barriers don't stop people camping. They stop people camping there.
Yeah,
correct.
So all we do is move it to some other section of the state, in part created by the state, providing them tents.
Yeah, so... Okay, that's this is the problem. What's actually happened if you watch it, when the barriers stop at Baggot Street Bridge, okay, they're down near Rathmines and Rathgar, and now again to the shock and horror of people of Dublin 6, they're moving into kind of Belgrave Square, okay, and in behind the children's playground, there's 8 or 9 tents have appeared hidden in a bunch of trees. So if they don't tackle this strategically, this is going to be an ongoing problem, and we'll have barricades going from here to Athlone.
And what do you think, Hazeltine, is the Thornton Hall thing? Because one of the issues was obviously there needs to be a buffer available for new arrivals to be able to be given effectively some form of shelter while more permanent accommodation is found. Does Thornton Hall provide that, meaning that the Grand Canal or Merrion Square or wherever else will no longer be used?
I think it's one element of the plan, and I think what needs to happen is a long-term strategic plan. We now have cross-agency work, which we working together, which previously there was not. So I think a lot of it was laid on the shoulder of the Department of Integration previously, whereas now it's a cross-department, which is a little better. However, moving forward, there needs to be a more long-term plan. Thornton Hall obviously is one element, but there needs to be other sites, and also looking at procedures, what do we do? And just on the point about Dublin 6, listen, I live in Dublin 6. I have voluntary groups in the last 24, 48 hours that have been very good going to help the residents. So yeah. Residents of the tents. So I don't think we can be saying, listen, these people aren't welcome in people's backyards, because there are groups welcoming them. So I don't want to create the fear of, listen, it's outside and therefore they are not welcome in such and such a park or such and such a canal. They are welcome. We shouldn't, for me, I don't think we should have erected barriers all the way down the canal. I think that's a decision of Waterways Ireland, and they need to look at how to remove them. So, and in the meantime, the cross agencies need to look at how to accommodate people and provide them with accommodation immediately.
But it's unacceptable, wherever they are, to be in tents, full stop, with the north side, south side. And this is the issue.
They need sanitation, they need services. Yeah. So, but in the meantime, while they are waiting for it, I for one will not be objecting to any tent suddenly popping up. I know certain residents might, but I have lots of groups that, like John would know himself and others, that have been helping these
Absolutely.
Individuals. Yeah. And we need to focus on when they arrive, how do we support them after the checks have been made.
One final thing before we wrap up our panel this morning. There is reports in today's Sunday Times that the Media Minister, Catherine Martin, is but mere moments away from producing a funding plan for RTE. The smart money was telling us, Kevin, that nobody's going to touch that with a barge pole till after an election. Do you think things have changed? Are we going to see the solution to all of RTE's funding problems come out soon?
Well, I think they'll have to do it for a general election. The smart money was, there was no way they'd do it before the local and Europeans. It's dragged on. They can't let it go, because if you let it go to a general election, there'll be some form of a new coalition, whether it has existing members of government or a Sinn Féin-led situation. and then it'll go into a working group and we'll be 3 years down the road and we won't have done anything. So she has to come forward with something. The problem still, I think, is that Catherine Martin is very much on the let's just take it all into the Exchequer, take it from general taxation. Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, not in that space yet. So there'll have to be a compromise. They'll have to come somewhere in the middle and we'll end up with probably the best or worst of both worlds, depending on how you look at it.
And you have to also suspect that Terence O'Rourke is the new chair, who's doing his best to get his arms around the issues, okay, is making it very clear to government that if this isn't clarified, I've taken up this role on the basis of these things will be sorted. If this isn't clarified very soon, it's going to be very hard to make any decisions with regard to public service broadcasting or the total review of
I think she'll do it before the summer recess, Anton, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think so. And then you get the summer break.
And have you any indication or any insight as to what is it going to be the hybrid, half media charge, half exchequer?
I genuinely don't think they've decided because they don't agree on it. But I think that's where we'll end up because they'll have to compromise and that's politics.
Well, as they say...
Hazel might tell us. it's her minister
Hazel's
in South Dublin.
Hazel's not along because Hazel agrees with Kevin. So, and I think there is a lot of still backroom working on this. But whatever happens, I think we need a clear, transparent broadcaster. You look at the BBC model over in the UK, make sure that it's devoid of ads, make sure that it's state funded, make sure that it's unbiased. And that's something that we need to work towards here. So.
Hazel, thank you very much. Is Hazel happy with her contribution?
Yeah. Hazel is going to say...
We'll only talk about Hazel in the third person for now.
Hazel's marvellous. Hazel's marvellous.
Hey, thanks, John.
Hazel's here. Thank you very much. Likewise, thank you to John Cunningham, Relationship Director of Morgan McKinley, and Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News for the Independent Group. We'll be back after this break.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.